It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Judge Kavanaugh is an outstanding person. And I am with them all the way. For people that come out of the woodwork from 36 years ago and 30 years ago, it's totally political.
That was the President of the United States speaking from New York City, where he's meeting at the United Nations, affirming his support of Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court. Sandy Rios with you this morning. I am having trouble keeping up. Are you? But we're going to do our very best today because I think it's important. That was the president last night. Brett Kavanaugh was on with his wife, Ashley, being interviewed by Martha McCallum. And this is basically, he wrote a letter yesterday to Senator Grassley in the committee saying he's not going anywhere. And that's basically what he said to Martha last night. Let's listen.
I'm not going to let false accusations drive us out of this process. And we're looking for a fair process where I can be heard and defend my integrity, my lifelong record of promoting dignity and equality for women, starting with the women who knew me when I was 14 years old. I'm not going anywhere.
You know, it was interesting. I hope you watched it. We will put the entire interview on our Facebook page so that you can see it. It was very long. He sat there with his wife. At times they were emotional. I honestly thought he was going to cry a few times. It was very heartrending. And so I'm going to play various clips from that, short clips from that interview, just to give you a touch of it. In fact, let's do that right now. Let's move down to Martha asked Ashley Kavanaugh what the effect was. You know, they have two little girls who had come to the hearing earlier when the protesters were out of control, you know, screaming. And remember, they had to remove their little girls. So Martha asked how it was going with the children. This is clip 5.
It's very difficult to have these conversations with your children, which we've had to have, some broader terms for our youngest. But they know Brett, and they know the truth. And we told them at the very beginning of this process, this will be not fun sometimes. You're going to hear things that people feel strongly, and you need to know that. And just remember, you know your dad.
You know your dad. And so then Judge Kavanaugh just basically restated what he's been saying over and over again in tweets and in public statements in clip 6.
The truth is, I've never sexually assaulted anyone in high school or otherwise. I am not questioning and have not questioned that perhaps Dr. Ford at some point in her life was sexually assaulted by someone in some place. But what I know is I've never sexually assaulted anyone.
You know, he went on to say something pretty stunning, really, really personal. And Martha didn't actually even ask him this. He volunteered it. And this is clip 8.
So you're saying that all through all these years that are in question, you were a virgin?
That's correct.
Never had sexual intercourse with anyone in high school?
Correct.
And through what years in college, since we're probing into your personal
life
here?
Many years after. I'll leave it at that. Many years after.
All right. So that's what happened. That's just a touch of it. Honestly, that was part of the interview Martha did. She did a great job. Martha's really, I think, grown in. She's always been good, but I think having her own show has made her grow even stronger and better at what she does. It was uncomfortable, you know, the things that she talked to him about. How did we ever get to this point where we have a public discussion about things so personal when you've got children and families? And what person with character and decorum, you know, wants to be asked those questions? But I really think that in some ways, if you saw it and you were offended by Martha's questions, You have to remember that he's going to appear before the committee on Thursday, and the Democrats, the way it's laying out right now, the Democratic senators, you know, meaning, you know, Spartacus and the others who had no dignity, no respect in the last hearing, are going to be asking Judge Kavanaugh about all of these sexual issues. And so I think Martha was in some way preparing him for that, whether she meant to or not. I think that was what was happening. So what? How about the accusers? What's going on with this? Well, let's change the subject just for a second, because I want to correct something that I told you yesterday. First up, Deborah Ramirez is that second accuser that Ronan Farrow and the other reporter alleged to have, he exposed himself to her. That was her story. Remember, she said she had to consult with her attorney and think about it for 6 days before she was sure if it was really Brett. She also called classmates to just see, was that Brett that did that? But no one confirmed it. No one said they were there. No one saw it. No one confirmed her account of this. That was Deborah Ramirez. But let me just say that I told you yesterday that she was a Soros fellow and had received a fellowship up to nearly $100,000. And now there's been a correction on that. Boy, when the news comes fast, this is what happens. Lots of outlets were reporting that. And the reason is because it was a woman named Deborah Ramirez, but she is an attorney she was a professor at Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts. And Deborah Ramirez is a very different person. She is, by the way, the co-chair for the Safe House Progressive Alliance for Nonviolence in Boulder, Colorado. And I actually had, I'll find it later. I had the sort of their mission statement. It's, you know, she may not be a Soros fellow, but she could be a Soros fellow. But nevertheless, the facts are important. And Deborah Ramirez was not the one who received the Soros fellowship, but she is involved in some really left-leaning things. And she's going to report this. She said she's not sure about her memories, so she had to call her classmates to confirm. None of them did, but they went ahead with the story. The New York Times, by the way, refused to run her story because after interviewing several dozen people, they were unable to find anyone who could corroborate the accusation. Nevertheless, of course, she deserves a hearing, of course, for some reason. I don't know why. I guess because she's a woman. That's the way it is right now. And I, as a woman, can say this is ridiculous, can't I? Peter Ducey gives a pretty good report last night on Fox about the follow-up with these women accusers. Let's listen.
Now Brett Kavanaugh is being accused of sexual misconduct in high school by Dr. Christine Blasey Ford and in college by Deborah Ramirez. Republicans are calling the timing of these accusations very suspicious. Democrats are calling for new delays, and Brett Kavanaugh is just trying to clear his name.
The truth is, I've never sexually assaulted anyone in high school or otherwise. I am not questioning and have not questioned that perhaps Dr. Ford at some point in her life was sexually assaulted by someone in some place. But what I know is I've never sexually assaulted anyone.
Deborah Ramirez says she needed to sit with a lawyer for 6 days before she was confident in details of her own story, that former classmate Brett Kavanaugh exposed himself to her at Yale. Kavanaugh fired off a furious defense, writing, quote, "These are smears, pure and simple, and they debase our public discourse, but they are also a threat to any man or woman who wishes to serve our country. Such grotesque and obvious character assassination, if allowed to succeed, will dissuade competent and good people of all political persuasions from service." The details backing up the latest batch of accusations against Kavanaugh are apparently so thin, the paper with the slogan, "All the news that's fit to print," wouldn't print them. The New York Times explains, quote, "The Times had interviewed several dozen people over the past week in an attempt to corroborate her story and could find no one with firsthand knowledge. Ms. Ramirez herself contacted former Yale classmates asking if they recalled the incident and told some of them that she could not be certain Mr. Kavanaugh was the one who exposed himself."
Meanwhile, Michael Avenatti is all over the news. He was on MSNBC and CNN last night, both claiming that he has, within the next 48 hours, he's going to release the name of someone who's a highly credible witness who has another story to tell about Brett Kavanaugh. And I think, you know, it was funny because as I observed it, Rachel Maddow was breathlessly hoping there'd be some details. And so was The CNN host just really excited about this, but he didn't give them anything. He just keeps promising. He's got all this stuff. He's written to the Senate committee demanding answers, demanding an FBI investigation about a nameless, accusationless person. It really is pretty remarkable. The crazies are out, and so far the Republicans are entertaining the crazies. That's pretty much what it, to me, boils down to. So how is the country responding to this? There's some interesting polls today. One poll that I read, let's see, I think it's this one right here. Yes. Here's a poll released on Monday morning that found that in two battleground states, Kavanaugh supporters are actually winning the fight. Of course, that's important because Joe Manchin is the Democratic incumbent in West Virginia. The voters support Kavanaugh's confirmation by 21-point margin, 51-30%. Women in West Virginia support Kavanaugh 45-35. I find that interesting because I saw a clip with Joe Manchin last night talking about how these women need to be heard. Yeah, so that's West Virginia. Then in North Dakota, Democratic Senator Heidi Heitkamp is trying to defend her seat. And the pro-Kavanaugh margin in North Dakota is 25 points, 53 to 28. Among women, 47 to 30. So that's really, I think, pretty interesting. There's another poll. Let's see. There's another poll I want to share with you. This isn't directly related to Kavanaugh, at least not the questions don't mention his name. But I still think this is a trend that's interesting. Gallup poll shows that the Republican Party has the highest favorability ratings in 7 years. And you know what? You know that's not because of the leadership. That's not because of Mitch McConnell finally standing on the floor and saying, oh, we're going to have a vote on Kavanaugh. I mean, we're going to vote on this. This is ridiculous. That's basically what he said. And the numbers, according to Gallup, the Republican favorability at 45%, the Democrats at 44%. And generally, the Democrats are way ahead. There's no question about it. 45% of Americans now have a favorable view of the Republican Party, which is a 9-point gain from last September, which is 36. And it's the party's most positive image since it registered 47% in January of 2011. That was right after the 2010 takeover of the House with Newt Gingrich as the speaker. And here's another interesting poll. I'm not sure what the poll is, but I'll get to it. Women are still more likely to view the Democrats favorably than they are Republicans, but the difference has contracted. A year ago, 35% of women said they viewed Republicans favorably. Democrats had a 14-point advantage, with 49% viewing the party favorably. In the latest poll, the GOP favorability rating rose to 40%. The Democrat favorability fell by 1 point. That leaves the Democrats with just an 8-point advantage. Democrats have completely lost their advantage with American men. A year ago, 40% of men viewed the Democrats favorably, while just 37% viewed the GOP favorably. Now Republicans are in favor with 50% of men. Favorability toward Democrats climbed 1 point to 41%. The Republicans, a 9-point advantage. And one more thing, I just think this is interesting. Republicans also now enjoy an advantage with middle-class voters. A year ago, Democrats led Republicans 46 to 36 among voters earning $30,000 to $74,000 annually. Now Republicans have the lead 49 to 45. The Democrats still lead over, however, excuse me, among low-income Americans and the wealthy. But even here, the advantage is smaller. Among low-income Americans, Democrats now enjoy an 11-point advantage versus 12 a year ago. Among wealthy Americans, the Democratic advantage has contracted to 7 points from 10. Just some very interesting signs. People are just looking to see. By the way, there's going to be a rally on behalf of Judge Kavanaugh. This is going to happen at the Russell Senate Office Building on Thursday at 8:30 in the morning for those of you in the D.C. area. That's 8:30 in the morning on Thursday. That's the day of the hearing, allegedly. There's more to say about that because Christine Ford is responding in interesting ways to the committee, so we'll just see if this thing's going to come off. Stay tuned, because J. Christian Adams is going to join me next. We're going to talk about Kavanaugh and also about that amazing story about Rod Rosenstein resigning, not resigning, now meeting with the president, also on Thursday. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is Carla from Nebraska. You are doing God's work, and you're a really great blessing. Before we move where we are at now, we listened to AFR on the radio, and we had it on 24/7. But where we live now, you are not on the radio. We missed listening to you so much, but finally, with our Android phone, we found you. We are now engaged in the political realm by contacting our president and our Congress leaders. And we have also found that by writing our comments in a Word document, we can then copy and paste the email everyone needs to be contacted. Thank you, thank you. Keep listening to God and doing His work.
American Family Radio's mission is to inform, equip, and activate our listeners to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture. Plan to partner with us in this vital work during our three-day share-a-thon beginning Tuesday, October 16th.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. Hurricane Harvey was the second worst disaster ever seen on American soil. 8 Days of Hope responded to that need in Houston, Texas, back in March, where 4,700 volunteers came from all over the world in all 50 states to love and serve people in need. When we left, we realized that there was still much more to do. So many people still were hurting, hundreds of thousands of families looking for somebody, anybody to help them. Here's your chance. 8 Days of Hope 16 will be back in Southeast Houston October 13th through October 20th. It's free. We provide the food and lodging. We're looking for skilled professionals, people who are semi-skilled, and people with no skills or less skilled and want to give back. For more information, you go to our website, 8daysofhope.com. We're expecting about 2,500 volunteers from all over America to go back to Houston to love and serve those in need. Hope to see you in Houston, 8daysofhope.com. For more information, 8daysofhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TME. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TME. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The hate and the vitriol surrounding Judge Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing has become almost unbearable. I've heard from many of you on my daily talk show, disgusted with the Democrats and their slander. It's exhausting, but we must stay the course. We must hold the line. Yesterday, Judge Kavanaugh released a letter defending his good name and vowing to fight the good fight. He said he would not be intimidated into withdrawing. He said there was a coordinated effort to smear his good name, but it would not drive him out. Judge Kavanaugh was right to describe the attacks as a last-minute character assassination. The left must not be successful in their crusade. Judge Kavanaugh's letter was passionate. He is resolved to hold the line, and we must be there to stand alongside him. As Edmund Burke once said, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Judge Kavanaugh will be voted on here on the Senate floor. Up or down?
But first, accuser Christine Blasey Ford and Judge Kavanaugh are expected to testify Thursday. It will be in a smaller room than the original Kavanaugh hearings, with less media access and one TV camera present. Ford will go first without Kavanaugh in the room, and there will be serious security and adequate breaks allowed.
I want to listen to Dr. Ford. I feel sorry for her. I think she's being used here.
Republicans are likely to use a female attorney to question both Ford and Kavanaugh, which sources say they hope will depoliticize the hearing. On the Democrat side, their senators plan to do the questioning. Professor Ford wrote Chairman Grassley, writing, quote, "While I am frightened, please know my fear will not hold me back from testifying, and you will be provided with answers to all of your questions. I ask for fair and respectful treatment." One Judiciary Democrat says she feels for the accuser.
Dr. Ford's life has been upended. So rather than dealing with trying to get to the facts of the allegations, no, they just would rather characterize this as being totally politically motivated. If there's any group that is being very motivated politically, I'd say it's the Republicans who are still stonewalling.
There are signs the prolonged battle is having an impact on Kavanaugh's approval numbers. The latest Fox poll reveals 40% would vote to confirm Kavanaugh to the high court, down from 45% a month ago. And on the question of who do you believe, 36% Professor Ford, 30% Judge Kavanaugh, while 34% unsure. Some Republicans are eager to get moving.
We will hear and should hear from Dr. Ford on Thursday, as planned. Then we should vote. There should be no more frivolous approaches towards the United States Senate.
And the president says he's standing by his nominee.
This could be one of the single most unfair, unjust things to happen to a candidate for anything. But I am with Judge Kavanaugh.
All right, so that was Mike Emanuel's report on Fox last night. The hearing is supposed to take place Thursday. You heard Mike describe it. It really is ironic. Judge Jeanine made this point, and it was a good one. We are affording constitutional rights to illegal immigrants and to non-citizens, left and right, demanding that they have constitutional rights. And yet, a nominee for the Supreme Court is being put through this circus, accused of being guilty without even any kind of evidence, assumed guilty, which is the opposite of our system of justice in this country. You know, if I need to explain this, in the old country, before our founders came, they had no rights. They could be accused. They could be put in debtor's prison. They could have their, they had no rights because they were assumed guilty. It was the burden of proof was on them to prove themselves innocent. I believe that's still the system in Britain. But here, they by design said, you know what, we're going to change that. You're going to be assumed to be innocent unless someone can prove that you are guilty. And it has to be by a system. It has to be by witnesses. It can't just be hearsay. And it cannot be one person's word against another. There has to be evidence. So this is not a court of law, but it's still the principle applies broadly, thank God, to all of us. And yet in the issue in the Me Too movement and the women's movement, which is disgusting to me, I might add, the opposite is true. Maisie Hirano is just if it weren't so serious, she's making a fool out of herself. But what is happening? You know, people are talking about her bank account should be subpoenaed. Who's paying her to make these outrageous statements? She made some statement. I don't know if we played it or not. She says, basically, I believe he's guilty of this, even though there might not be much evidence because of the way he rules in cases. I just know, you know, it's just wrong the way he rules in cases. That's basically what she said, which is just a ridiculous statement. I have to say, from a woman's point of view, these women bring tremendous disgrace to the seriousness of serious-minded women. It's embarrassing. They are like the quintessential silly women so often spoken of in the past that people can't say now, but I can. Women can be very silly. And that's the way I see that, Senator, and that's the way I see these accusations. Only now they have serious repercussions because people are listening. Well, let me just say that I have a series of letters here. You know what? No, I'm going to talk about this next. This is a report from the New York Times about the women protesting all over the country against Judge Kavanaugh. And this is what it says. Survivors of sexual assault and their supporters stood shoulder to shoulder on the steps of the New York City Hall on Monday morning, holding up signs that say, "I believe Christine, misogyny bores me," and "Block Injustice Kavanaugh." And in Washington, 100 protesters were arrested after gathering in front of the Supreme Court and Senate office buildings. In fact, at least 128 people were arrested and charged with misdemeanors. About a third were arrested at about 10:30 in the Dirksen Senate office building for unlawfully participating in a demonstration. The remaining two-thirds were arrested at about 12:15 in the rotunda of the Russell Senate office building. Demonstrators sat in the hallway outside the office of Susan Collins, wearing shirts that said, "Believe women, be a hero." And they chanted, "We believe Debbie Ramirez. We believe Dr. Ford. We believe Anita Hill." And then at Yale Law School, Judge Kavanaugh's alma mater, some classes were canceled for the day, and students and faculty staged a sit-in on the first floor of Sterling Law Building. "This hits home," said Mariella Simmons, a second-year law student from Winter Park, Florida. "Brett Kavanaugh walked these hallways. We will not let Dr. Blasey Ford's experiences be invalidated by partisan nonsense. Ms. Burke said, the founder of the Me Too movement. She said, this isn't her burden to bear. She is the one who should be protected. And if the government won't do it, then we will. You know, could I just point out that IQ and knowledge has absolutely nothing to do with common sense? And so the parade continues of the silly women. But, okay, so that's my profound comment for the morning. J. Christian Adams has joined us, and we're happy that he has. Jay is a Christian, is a whistleblower from the Justice Department from the from the early years of the Barack Obama administration. He's a good friend. And I just really wanted to talk to him about both Kavanaugh and Rosenstein this morning. So he joins us now. Christian, thanks for joining us.
Morning, Sandy.
Hey, listen, I've been talking about Kavanaugh a lot, as you can imagine. So let me ask you, I'm sure you watched the Martha McCallum interview. How could you not? And I would really love to know what you thought about that overall, just your observations as an attorney.
Well, I mean, he is fighting, and that's an indication to me that he believes in what he's fighting over. And, you know, this is more than just about smearing somebody's reputation. This is more than just about a nomination. I think folks have figured this out by now. This is about who controls the democratic process. Is it a loud, obnoxious, deconstructive left, or do we rely on those institutions that have served the country so well, starting with the Constitution? Do we rely on the rule of law, or do we rely on chaos? And I think this is a much bigger fight than just whether or not Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed.
Oh, I totally agree, and I try to make that point all the time when it comes to Donald Trump. People want to make it about him, and certainly he's a big personality. He has a lot to do with not just the Kavanaugh thing, but the whole deep state, the whole uproar, the upheaval of our constitutional process is much greater. We can support President Trump's policies, but we can understand that the challenges are to the deep root of our Constitution. That's why we have to fight. Even people that don't like him should be fighting with us. But in the issue of Kavanaugh, one thing, because, again, you think like he does, he was very careful about not answering questions that Martha asked about motivation. He was very careful. I don't mean sly, I just mean appropriately careful. But the one thing he said that I think is going to cause him trouble, Christian, is when he volunteered that he had been a virgin in high school and well into college and then would not be specific after that. I can imagine that the left, those Democrats in the Senate Judiciary Committee, are going to take that and use it in really distasteful ways. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, well, look, that's how they play. Anytime you reveal something personal about yourself, it is twisted profoundly. I remember I gave a speech back in 2011, where I talked about how Mother Teresa of Calcutta was always being approached by people who just wanted to join her cause. And she would say to them, go find your own Calcutta. There's lots of Calcuttas out in the world. And I had mentioned in the speech that that's something that motivated me, is not just glomming on to other people, but it's actually going out and finding your own Calcutta. Well, the point is, I was attacked in the left, TPM Muckraker, all of they found cause to ridicule. And that's exactly a tactic that these people use. Is ridicule. It's right out of Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky. And if you can find anything to ridicule them, you'll do it. And talking about what Kavanaugh talked about is one of the favorite topics of ridicule on the left. I mean, they make whole movies about people like that. And I think you're right that it's something that they will be used against them.
Yeah, it's going to be embarrassing because they don't have any scruples. I mean, we've already seen that. I just hate, honestly, I hate the thought of him having to sit before those rabid jackals in another hearing. It just seems so wrong to me, Christian. And you know they will have no decorum. They will be rude and crude. And so it's just going to be a nightmare, I think, for Judge Kavanaugh. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think we're at a high watermark. Everything after this makes things worse for him. Was this properly handled by leadership on the Judiciary Committee? I don't know. We'll see. But he's sort of at a high water mark, and all that can happen is his support will ablate. It will slowly drift away. No one's going to watch this frenzy and say, oh, I didn't support him before, but I support him now. This whole structure is designed to erode his support, and that's a troubling situation.
You know, I just thought when you mentioned Alinsky, I was reading in a couple of analyses of this, people saying that what the left is doing to Kavanaugh is a lot like what the mob would do to destroy someone. And then I remembered, you know, you well know, Christian, that Saul Alinsky actually spent a lot of time with the mob in Chicago to find out how to do the worst harm to his enemies. This is widely known. It's part of his personal story. So no wonder it's mob tactics, because that's exactly what Saul Alinsky took to write his playbook, Rules for Radicals. I'm reading that it's possible. Now, Christine Ford has just written another letter. I don't know if you saw this, Christian, but you know, her first letter is awkward. The letter that she wrote to Dianne Feinstein, where she reports this. It's been analyzed. She uses kind of some odd visual things. She talks about the two men scrapping. People think that it doesn't even sound like a real story, but that have analyzed this. Now, a second letter has just been sent to Senator Grassley, dated the 22nd, and it's very, very well worded. It's like a different person is writing this letter. I don't know. This is all subjective, I recognize, but this letter makes her sound like a real champion. She says, "My original intent was first and foremost to be a helpful citizen in a confidential way that would minimize collateral damage to all families and friends involved."
Yeah.
So she sounds very credible in the second letter. But now they're making more demands. They don't want, again, they don't want this attorney hired by the Republicans, this sex assault specialist, to do the questioning. They want the Republican senators. And now they're demanding the bio and all the information about this attorney that's been chosen. What can you say about that? Do they have a right to do that?
Well, look, there's no rights here. This is all a game of power fight. I mean, this is a struggle of using raw power on both sides at this point. There's no right and wrong. It's who will destroy the other. I mean, we're at that point, both in this hearing and perhaps getting close to that point in the country. And there's no right. What you're seeing now is she's been elevated to icon status on the left as the great savior of the court and abortion and Roe v. Wade and, you know, all of the other crazed pseudo-theological things that these people exist for. And so it's almost messianic, you know, the woman driving across the country to save us from Trump. You know, it has a comic and messianic angle. And so surely that second letter was not written by her. She's been elevated up. All of the machinery of the left is now engaged, and she's getting help. And so it shouldn't surprise anybody that, you know, suddenly things are changing. And she's just a vessel for all of these organizations to deploy their power.
You know, it's interesting because I noticed Michael Avenatti, of course, now says he's got another accuser coming out in the next, 30 hours, maybe 24. I'm not sure. He first said 36 or who knows. But he's promising all these salacious details that she's very credible. And now he's writing to the House or to the Senate Judiciary Committee making demands. I demand an FBI investigation, but for a nameless person with no details in the charges, plus a ton of other things, as though he has standing. It's kind of the same thing you just described, isn't it?
Yeah, how hilarious that they're falling right into the narrative that the FBI is not to be trusted. It's like all of these far-left groups are demanding FBI investigations. Maybe they'll put Andy McCabe and Peter Strzok and all of those FBI people who were going after Trump. I mean, that just almost proves the point that the FBI is not to be trusted, because they want, and look, the FBI doesn't investigate anything. I mean, that's the other thing. To have people want a federal law enforcement agency to get involved is frightening. The FBI investigates crimes, federal crimes only, not state crimes. So it just shows how completely unintelligent they are and unaware of the constitutional separation of powers. The FBI is not like your go-to agency when you need a hit job done. Now, it was during the Obama administration, for sure. That's what the dossier was. That's what the FISA warrants were. But, you know, they're not as this all-purpose political agency for the left.
Yeah, that's right. Well, at least they hadn't been. Christian, I want to talk to you about Rosenstein, and we're up against a break. Can you stay just a little bit longer?
Okay.
Okay, very good. Thanks so much. J. Christian Adams is my guest, and when we come back, boy, the other jaw-dropper of yesterday, and still a jaw-dropper, and all of it coming to fruition on Thursday, the hearing and the meeting with Rosenstein and President Trump on Thursday. This is a big deal. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
And who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Esther, a young girl, became queen of the Persian Empire when Israel was subject to Persian rule. A wicked man named Haman tried to get the king to exterminate all Jews. Esther, a Jew herself, was queen when this genocidal conspiracy was brought to bear, but her uncle Mordecai put her royal position in perspective. Perhaps God made you queen just for this very moment, to intervene on behalf of the Jewish people. Like Esther, perhaps God gave you the platform, position, and influence you have for this very moment, to stand against darkness. Perhaps you were born for such a time as this.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. A lot of anti-Trumpers and never-Trumpers are pinning their hopes on getting rid of President Trump by using the 25th Amendment. The 25th Amendment provides that if a president is unable to discharge the duties of his office, he may be replaced by the vice president if a majority of the cabinet agrees. This gambit will never work, however, and I'll tell you why. The 25th Amendment also provides that if a president is removed because his cabinet thinks he's unable to do the job, the president can immediately resume his duties simply by sending a letter to the leadership of the Senate and the House stating that, contrary to the opinion of his knuckleheaded cabinet, he is perfectly capable of discharging his duties. Does anybody think Trump won't write that letter? I sure don't.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Good news. You are not stuck with your health care plan. Really, you have a choice, and it's a great one. It's called MediShare, and if you've heard about it and wondered what exactly it is, it's a way that people share their health care bills, and these are people who have a common faith, who want to be part of something beautiful that not only meets their health care needs, but the needs of others too. And it's people who love to save money, big time. MediShare members typically save $500 a month per family on their health care costs. That is a life changer for people. So this could be for you. Maybe it's what you've been looking for, a way to pay healthcare bills that's not only very smart financially, but it's even profound. MediShare is a nonprofit with 400,000 members nationwide who pray for and share with each other. So yes, you're not stuck. There's another way, and it could save you a lot. Hit *345 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. Message and data rates may apply. That's *345.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Today, President Trump returns to the United Nations to give the heads of state and diplomats attending its General Assembly a reprise of the tough love he dished out last year. Now, however, the president can point to several steps that he has taken in the intervening period to augment well-deserved criticism with concrete corrective action. For example, he abandoned the theater of the absurd that is the UN Human Rights Council, an organization whose members are among the most notorious of all human rights abusers. Next, Mr. Trump slashed U.S. funding for the U.N. agency that perpetuates and enables the Palestinians' victimhood narrative and their refusal to make peace with Israel. It's time he did the same to the U.N.'s anti-corruption arm, being used selectively to undermine another key American ally, the government of Guatemala. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein left the White House after a previously scheduled national security meeting and amid media reports that he may be out of a job. According to a source, Rosenstein met with White House Chief of Staff John Kelly on Friday after the New York Times first reported that Rosenstein discussed recording the president and invoking the 25th Amendment to remove the president after he fired FBI Director James Comey in May 2017. allegations Rosenstein vigorously denied. At the UN, members of the cabinet said the 25th Amendment was not raised with them.
I have never once been in the White House where that conversation has happened. I am not aware of any cabinet members that are even talking about that. It is completely and totally absurd.
In a statement, the White House press secretary confirmed Rosenstein initiated a, quote, extended conversation, unquote, with the president over the weekend. Because the president is at the United Nations General Assembly and has a full schedule with leaders from around the world, they will meet on Thursday when the president returns to Washington, D.C. Democrats are urging Rosenstein to hold on.
This looks to me like a slow-moving Saturday night massacre. It seems like the only question is whether these steps take place now or they take place after the midterms.
House Republicans want the memos drafted by former FBI Director Andrew McCabe that document the Rosenstein allegations, and they want to hold a public hearings.
We need Rod Rosenstein under oath before the Judiciary Committee. Articles of impeachment have been filed against Rosenstein. Under House rule, those have now ripened to the point where any one member of Congress can force a vote on Rod Rosenstein's impeachment.
A source familiar with White House weekend discussions told Fox they focused on whether Rosenstein was, quote, compromised, based on what the sources described as multiple conflicts of interest, including his role in the firing of Comey, his role signing a surveillance warrant for Trump campaign aide Carter Page, and Rosenstein's decision to hire special counsel Robert Mueller shortly after Mueller interviewed with the president to be FBI director.
That was Catherine Herridge of Fox News. Of course, Sandy Rios back with you. J. Christian Adams is still with me. Christian worked at the Justice Department for a long time, knows the inner workings of it, knows Rod Rosenstein, I'm thinking, and most of the characters involved here. I think, Christian, there wasn't a story that threw me more yesterday than this one. Right after I got off the air yesterday morning, you know, Axios was reporting that he had turned in his resignation, a letter, and then late afternoon, Fox starts reporting that he didn't resign at all. What do you know about this particular part and how that played out? And why we got a story that he resigned?
Well, I don't have any inside information, but I can tell you, Sandy, you probably remember as soon as his nomination was announced during the transition, I said what a disaster it was.
Yep.
And he's well known as a swamp creature. He has more allegiance to Democrats than he does to the president. He then hired a group of deputies who were Democrats, leftists, Soros fellows, to work as his deputies in the office. And they have been threatening the president and anybody else who's conservative over the last year and a half over small and not always small things. They've been pushing back against the president internally in ways that haven't been reported, and he's an absolute disaster. So when it was announced that he was resigning, I thought, hey, thank heavens it's finally occurred. Mm, but what typically happens with Rod Rosenstein is he flexes muscle as it relates to the institution. He talks about how, you know, that will be very dangerous if you do that, and he's always against conservative and the president's interests, it seems. He never fights against the left. It's always he's fighting against his boss. And so I was thrilled when it said that he was going to resign. And now, of course, what's happening is he's going to marshal his forces over the next 3 days and probably make more threats to the president on Thursday.
Well, that's exactly what I thought too, Christian. It's like this should have happened right away. I'm sure you read that he met with John Kelly over the weekend and had lengthy conversations. It seems to me, doesn't the chief of staff at the White House, wouldn't he have had the right to fire Rosenstein himself?
Well, of course he would, but what I'm trying to emphasize for people to understand is Rosenstein and his deputies have been making threats every single time that the president's interests, the Republicans' interests, conservative interests have pushed against Rosenstein. Rosenstein has threatened members of Congress as it relates to documents.
Yes, I remember. Yes.
Just in the last week, the president ordered documents declassified, remember? And lo and behold, about 24 hours later, they weren't going to be declassified because Rosenstein and all of his institutionalists at the Justice Department went into high gear to stop the declassification. So this is who he is. He's a swamp creature. This is the amazing thing. The president who ran against draining the swamp picked just about the biggest swamp creature there was in the Justice Department to be the Deputy Attorney General. And it's been a disaster from the minute it was announced. I've written so many articles about this that I'm exhausted by it. And so how it is that this happened is just something that we're going to have to figure out one day.
This is a political question, and I know we don't have a crystal ball, but I really can't myself think through this. The president is being threatened as though, you better not fire Rod Rosenstein. That could be obstruction of justice. You better not do that. You better not do that. And now there is a delay, which makes me worry, because you and I both know he gets terrible advice from the swamp creatures inside the White House. The president's instincts are right on this. What do you think? I mean, is there a danger to him if he should fire him? Any danger? What would be the danger?
Well, the danger is, and I don't want to call it a danger, it's just simply a to-do list. The danger is that the left goes berserk and activates their, Watergate script, Sunday Massacre script, and we endure that for a couple of days. You know, it's about five news cycles worth of outrage that would have to be endured if Rosenstein were fired, but the country would be better off. The threat that they've been making, and look, Rosenstein's deputies make it. I name these people in articles of PJ Media that these guys were left-wing Soros lawyers, Soros fellows. They won money for Soros fellowships. And these are the people who are now, right now, at the Justice Department as deputies to Rod Rosenstein, undermine. They didn't vote for President Trump, but they're now in political positions working for President Trump.
All right, everybody asks me, and I bet they ask you too, so where is General Sessions on this? Can he not intercede? Does he have no power to rid the Justice Department of Rod Rosenstein? Does he have any will to do that?
I have an article. I retweeted it. I wrote it right after the election, said it's going to be a lot harder to drain the swamp than you think. And I get into great detail in the answer to your question, how the institution of the department has their mysterious ways of doing things. And so what has happened when you go there, and the Attorney General just can't flip a switch and clean the place out. I've said that over and over. And Sessions has done some extremely good things, which I could talk about for an hour, on voter ID, on elections, on voting, on immigration, on rule of law, and on all sorts of fantastic stuff, IRS targeting. But he is faced with this huge inertia of the department and cleaning house. I mean, the same lunatics who ran the voting section during the Texas voter ID fights under Holder are still in charge. The same people who went after police officers in the Civil Rights Division are still in charge. They haven't been changed inside the sections. And so you have this massive inertia. And by the way, that's because Eric Dreiben hasn't been confirmed. That's still languishing the Senate. So you don't even have the guys who would be draining the swamp in place yet, almost 2 years after the election.
How do we get those stories floated yesterday? If Rosenstein had not resigned, why did we get all these stories about Noel Francisco, who was the Solicitor General, and also about General Sessions' Chief of Staff taking over for Rosenstein? Where did those come from?
Yeah.
They seemed to be reliable sources at the time.
Well, here's how it works. The power play was taking place. And so you had some people who thought there was finally victory to get rid of Rosenstein and his left-wing deputies. And those people got the story out quick that Rosenstein was going to be fired or resigned, but he's gone, because that's a victory for the president. And then you had the counterattack by the institutionalists and the Democrats, who are working together. The Rosenstein, the institutionalists like McCabe and Strzok, and then the Democratic Party, they're all working together against the president. And they counterattacked with, oh, no, he's not going anywhere. He's going to meet the president on Thursday. And that's what you saw. It's a very accelerated news cycle based on leaks from competing camps.
Okay, one last thing, and it's not a huge news story, but it's still important. You talked about General Sessions doing something. And remember the name Allison Hrabar. She was the one who organized the disruption in the restaurant to Christine Nielsen with her fiancé, husband, whoever it was, her boyfriend. That horrible assault, really not physical, but verbal assault that drove them out of the restaurant. And she turns out she works at DOJ. And are you following that story without me filling in the blanks? I'll let you fill
in. I've written extensively about it at PJ Media. I was the first one to leak to show the video of James O'Keefe on Wednesday. James gave me the video. It was up at PJ at 9 a.m. when the embargo was lifted. So, yes, I'm following it.
Okay, so tell people what's happened to her. She's been removed.
Yeah, but we don't know how. All we know is she doesn't work there. We don't know if she's been removed, Sandy. She
could have quit.
All that the press office said was Allison Raybar no longer works for the department. Well, that's a much different thing than Allison Raybar has been marched out of the door by security versus Allison Raybar quit. I mean, look, this person should have been marched out in June when she attacked the DHS secretary, the screaming mob. The important thing we've learned is that she may have been using Justice Department databases to figure out where these people live. And also other conservatives, they targeted at their homes with loud screaming mobs. And it may be that she was tapping into these computer databases that she had at the department to figure out their private addresses.
Yeah, which is just, we could talk for hours, Christian. It's just so thick. The swamp is just getting, seems to be thicker. I do think we're at a tipping point, though. But every time we're at a tipping point, the president backs away. He gets bad advice, it seems to me. And so I'm not optimistic about this. Are you?
Look, there's a lot that could be said that I won't say on your show. So, look. You're right. It always seems right when you think things are going to get fixed that there's a retreat. And that's because the battle that took place in the 2016 election is now playing out behind the scenes. And everybody has factions, and the president and his people, there's all sorts of angles of influence. Anybody who thinks the president is just going to yell, "You're fired," and fix this is delirious. It doesn't work that way. And, I tried to explain this to the voters in 2016 before the election that, you know, the federal government has enormous inertia. And if you don't know how the government works, it takes a long time to figure out the contours and the character of that inertia. Unless you've been inside the federal government, I know the Trump voters don't want to hear, you know, about, oh, he's an insider. Well, I'm not going to vote for any insiders. Well, okay, well, then wait a while before your candidate figures out how to work the government. If he's not been in it. That's just how it goes. That's the realities of Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Christian, I'm going to let you go. I appreciate your time this morning and your great writing. In fact, whatever you are currently writing about, this Rosenstein situation or the Kavanaugh, we'll put that on our Facebook page so that people can read from PJ Media what you're writing about, okay?
All right, Sandy, take care.
Okay, thanks. You too, J. Christian Adams. You know, speaking of protests in public places, Ted Cruz and his wife, Heidi, were in Washington, D.C. just a few days ago, maybe even yesterday, I'm not sure, the timeline here. And he was assaulted by a group of demonstrators. Let's listen to it for just a second. Clip 14.
Survivors, we believe survivors.
Hi. I'd love to talk with you about Brett Kavanaugh tonight. I'm a constituent. I'd love to know what your vote is going to be tonight. I know that you're very close friends with Mr. Kavanaugh.
We believe.
And do you believe survivors, sir? Please don't touch me. Do you believe in survivors? We believe survivors. We believe survivors.
We believe survivors.
Senator, I have a right to know what your position is on Brett Kavanaugh.
We believe.
God bless you, ma'am.
Bless you as well. I really appreciate you. I'm a survivor of sexual assault, ma'am. I believe all survivors. There are now three people who have come forward and who have said that Brett Kavanaugh has attacked them. I know that you're close friends with him. Could you talk to him about that?
All right, so what ended up happening, it just got worse and worse, and finally Ted Cruz and his wife Heidi decided to leave. The crowd cheered. One of the guys there said, "Beto's way hotter than you, dude." "Excuse me," says Cruz, "let my wife through." Another protester shouts, "Sexist, racist, anti-gay." You see how this goes. We're going to have to restore some law and order in this country and decency. And we are at a tipping point as to whether we can do that. I really do think only God can help us. It's just too complicated. And I know He will. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio. Faith.